So this is the first of five lunchtime conversations. Each weekday, this week we're having a conversation right here. Sort of focusing on different themes each day. As I mentioned to Jerry just earlier in an email, this is not a panel discussion. This is not a presentation. This is a conversation. Yeah. And so we've invited people here to sort of center the conversations, but it's really an opportunity for us to all talk about what we're experiencing and about how to keep moving our community forward.
I'm Jerry. I was a playwright for Prometheus Redux, a project that was important to me. I'm glad to have done it. I've worked with Touchstone touching four decades, I think, in various productions. Not regular, but every 10 years they call me up. Now I'm interested in the conversation around health in a global way. What is a healthy community, but also in terms of what we were touching on with healthcare in the play, and knowing that what you do in a play is you find extremes, just to get this off on you, extremes. So the fact that you would have stage 4 and stage liver disease is in the myth. You know, Prometheus's liver is the target of the eagles that Zeus sends out, so that was clear. But that also set up very clearly an extreme in healthcare. We had the best healthcare ever imagined in the history of humans in terms of what we can do. But access to it in this country is horrific. It's expensive, it's hard, there are inequalities in the delivery of the systems, which is why we put all those medical terms up there. A medically indigent adult with one of the most expensive needs possible is an extreme dramatic choice. What happens when everything about you as a medical team is, and as a physician and as a nurse, is to bring health to the individual, whoever he is, yet the systems, quite rightly, first they say, who can pay for it? That's a silly question, my opinion. But the next thing is, who'd take care of him if he got out? Where would he go? Who would see that he got his meds? What systems do we have? And so my wife's an RN, I think healthcare, my sister's an MD. I think healthcare providers are heroes, mostly. But we have systems that are broken, not delivering. And so that's where the overall health of the community is.
Hello everyone, I'm Alyssa. I am Touchstone Apprentice for 2018 to 2019. I was the choral director for Prometheus Redux. I'm very passionate about health and healthcare. And when I was growing up, I never had health insurance. And as I got older, I realized that wasn't a normal thing. But it wasn't until I was much older that I realized it wasn't a normal thing. And many of my peers also grew up in very poor households who didn't have health care. And it's something that touches me deeply because when you come from a family who can't afford health care, you see the repercussions of that as they go through life. And I watched several of my family members die much too early because they simply couldn't see a doctor. And that should not be an issue in a country that has more than enough resources to provide healthcare for everyone. And just because you come from a place where healthcare is not in your family doesn't mean you don't have something to offer the community and that your life still has value.
So Prometheus Redux was not like a play that Jerry wrote off on his own, and we said, "Ooh, let's produce that play." We brought Jerry in. Jerry worked especially with Bill to have conversations with people from the community. So the that put you, Jerry, in a really wonderful position. Not as an outsider per se, but you know, to look at the stuff that we were saying, like, here's stuff from our community, right? You're talking to lots of people. You, as the writer, have to kind of figure a bunch of stuff out to be able to write that play. Through that process, are there things that you can tell us about our community, about health in our community, based on the conversations that you had?
Well, to put it into context, yeah, we did. We started 2 years ago and began to do story circles, beginning with all kinds of people, with folks in the community, with folks in the Black community, with folks, former steelworkers, then their kids, sometimes their grandkids. Some of these were formal circles, story circle work, some of them were interviews. Then that expanded out as learning more. You know, you learn more, and it was really, there was a conversation with Guillermo, I think his niece, who is a pharmacist, and seeing this connection, generational connection, between the steelworker generation and the people who are working in the medical field. I said, there's a bunch of them, because that's the jobs here now, in a lot of ways. And so the conversation, your dad was a steelworker? Yeah, mine too. You know, that conversation comes up. Joe Carson and I were trying to figure out why this stuff works, why it can release such power in a community, and this festival is just knocking me over. Each event I go to is doing that. But she, we were struggling how to figure out how to, and by the way, Joe, I'm thinking about Joe, because she died at 2 months shy of being eligible for Medicare. A great playwright, a great American poet, published, well-known, award-winning, could not afford health insurance. And she died of colon cancer that did not have to kill her. Mm-hmm. And so we think about the people in the community that cannot afford health care, that we lose. So everything you need is here. Everybody you need is here. But we don't listen to each other. We run past each other. We pass each other on 22. We don't trust each other. So that's the place of art and music, and a place where people can gather to begin to trust one another. So there's that. And I'll just give you the seven principles that hold this stuff together. Agency, the people close to the problem need to be the people making the decisions about the problem. And so it was important that we did readings of the play, that people who were portrayed in the play, or people like them portrayed in the play, got to say, oh man, you can't do that, you can't say that, that sucks. Or, man, I love it, it was beautiful. Remy was at one of those early, early readings. Agency, authenticity. There's a power in authenticity. And even though they might not be skilled, trained actors to, you know, watch that play and go, that guy was a steelworker. I know he was a steelworker. Adds a level of our of how we take it in. It's not played.
Are you chicken around? That would be me. Thank you.
Artistry, and thank you, Christopher. Being able to raise the stories to a place where they're achievable at whatever your cultural understanding of an artistry is. And the artistry is going to be different in different cultural contexts. But to raise that up and really be looking at it and say, yeah, I look like good theater to me. And that's important. Accuracy. We were doing making changes all the way through the process, because just because the playwright says it doesn't mean it's right. And if you say something inaccurate, you've lost everybody, right? Especially on the shared experience. There's fictional experience in there too. Only I know if that's accurate. Audacity, taking on things that are just too damn big or too seeing something you've never seen before. Spectacle, but this is not spectacle. Some of the stuff that's happening here is spectacle. But just seeing something you've never seen before. Taking care of your audience, knowing what your audience is looking for. And accessibility. I was thrilled last night to see the caption. Accessibility is vital. We cannot imagine our beloved community and let people out of it and make stuff that's going to shut people away. So those are my settings. I'll shut up. Did that answer anything?
Hearing you say, I mean, I was listening for an answer to the question. I think that the most direct answer that I heard in terms of what you were able to see looking at this, you know, having to process all this stuff, what you were able to see is that we have all the pieces.
Everything you need is in this community. Now, that's true in most communities. Mm-hmm. It's not true in all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some communities are fractured enough that it takes an entire rebirth or an abandonment. You know, it depends upon where you are working. But mostly the stuff is there, you know? I work with coal miners in eastern Kentucky and shrimpers on the coast of Georgia and other industries that are gone or going. And that's America. That is not just here. But what, you know, and each community has to find its art. And the arts is central in that search and central in the solution. Anybody watch the Ken Burns Country Music Plan?
So
anybody get to watch that?
So you watch it.
Harlan County shows up again and again and again. And how people sing and make music and make song of their story is part of that survival. Absolutely.
Is Harlan County where they had the big opioid situation?
Well, we have the big opioid situation everywhere in the country. At the end of this month, I'm going to a community in Maine for a conference called What's Art Got to Do with It? And it's about battling the opioid crisis. It's everywhere. But Harlan County is where the opioid crisis began. Right after OxyContin, synthetic morphine, was invented, that's where Purdue Pharma tried out its business model to dump it on poor and struggling communities in massive amounts. That was not an accident. It was not. They did it on purpose.
Wow.
And they were convicted for it. Here's a great story. I'm going to offend somebody in the room, but I wasn't allowed to tell it because the guy didn't give me permission to tell it. But I read it in the New Yorker last year, so now I can tell it. But the Republican elected county prosecutor in Wise County, Virginia, was in 2002, 17 years ago, prosecuting Purdue Pharma for dumping opioids on that coal mining county. And just as he was about to go to trial, he was a Republican, he was still a Republican, he got a call from one of his heroes. This is about 2003 at this point when this is going to trial. He gets a call from one of his heroes, America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani. And Rudy has been, right after being America's mayor, has been hired by the Sacra family and Purdue Pharma. And he says, let these people go. They're good people. Mm-hmm. Don't prosecute them. So months after his heroism, that SOB is trying to use politics to interfere in a prosecution, to obstruct a prosecution. He's pond scum. That said, went through with the prosecution, found Purdue Pharma guilty. Six Purdue execs went to jail, and they had to pay a $6 million fine. And Purdue Pharma said, well, we don't need those execs, and $6 million is nothing compared to the $1.5 billion that we made last year on this by dumping into poor communities. We're going to expand it. And so now we have 22 states and hundreds of communities suing Purdue Pharma and Johnson & Johnson, but it was all there. It was all right there. And the motors that are holding it back were all there in the early 2000s. So we made a series of plays there around the opioid crisis, and Harlan County, Kentucky went from the highest overdose death rate in Kentucky to one of the lowest overdose death rates in Kentucky because of their art. It's the Higher Ground Project, and that's from the Kentucky Department of Health. Now, correlation is not causality, but the play and the conversations around that work, because it was 100 people in that one, it was like Steelbound, there was so much energy that, you know, churches start doing clothing exchanges and food banks open and job interview stuff, and let's invite the rehab kind of thing to this county, as opposed to saying not in my backyard. And people talking in church and with each other changes the conversation. And they're, you know, yeah. And they're still doing it. They're still making the plays and inspired other communities to make plays. So Bethlehem's got to inspire other communities to tell their stories. Stop asking me questions.
So what are some of the what are some of the things that we observe here in Bethlehem that are obstacles to the health of the community? We've heard that a very hopeful message that maybe we have all the pieces to solve the puzzle, right? But what are some of the things that we know that are plaguing the health of the community in a big way?
Well, I don't think it comes as a surprise to anyone that healthcare in this country is very much tied to employment. And in Bethlehem, that meant the steel. I remember when our family moved to Bethlehem in 1962, my folks were going around, you know, lining up professionals to work, and my dad found a dentist through his church. And one of the first questions he asked is, well, are you working at the steel? And my dad said, no, I'm at Lehigh. And he said, okay. And that's because he had two different fee scales. One for people who worked at the steel, because they had a gold-plated plan that would pay all kinds of things, and another fee scale for everybody else. Now, this was not a, you know, charity scale. This was like a regular for-profit scale. But the steel was making so much money and had such high benefits on their health plan that they skewed the whole, you know, the whole healthcare system in the Lehigh Valley because of that. It was either steel or not steel, you know.
You know, making money is a very important thing. But maybe there's some places where it shouldn't be the dominant deciding factor around provision of services. And certainly healthcare seems to be one of those. But it also makes me look at the corrosive nature of capitalism. Now, I believe in a free market system. I'm not interested in having a government dictating prices. But the whole idea of competition somehow has been agreed upon as like reality, right? That, you know, Darwin, right? And that if we get too far away from competition as being the primary energy that drives us, then we will become defunct in some way. And yet, the whole idea of cooperation, which is something that this festival is dedicated to, and people are so excited about the joy, and they want it so much, it makes me think that the health of our community can be accomplished by advancing the importance of cooperation and mutual concern. But I have to accept the fact that the marketplace is like, I was speaking before, this is like, we live in like a saltwater ocean, which is this competition and bottom line thinking. If you want to create something which is of a different culture, like about cooperation, it's like putting a freshwater fish in salt water. It just, you know, either you're gonna be able to deal with the competitive thing, but you can't. It's just like a bubble. You're gonna lose your. But I feel that to a certain degree, in order to make a more healthy community, what we have to do is we have to turn this from salt water into fresh water, and which means cooperation and mutual concern and building institutions. It's not just the hospital, it's the way we work with each other, how we deal with each other, what's rewarded and what's not rewarded, our value systems.
If I could piggyback on that regarding the boundaries, you asked the question about what's holding us back, what are boundaries or struggles in this. I think that what you said at the end there about how we deal with one another is one of the most important aspects of that, because we can sit here at this table and we can say we value the health of our community, and the second we leave this door and we see somebody on the street, we're like, ugh! Okay? So, like, we have to be real with ourselves. How many times do we judge somebody based on what they look like out on the street? How many times do we think they put themselves in that position? How many times do we think they don't speak my language, so they're stupid? Although this is an exceptional table, so I don't think everybody here thinks this way. But that is an important aspect of how we are going to address these problems. Where are our problems with that? How do we think that that's their problem and their fault, but not my fault if it happens to me?
Thank you.
I think in regards to health as well, as far as like inclusion and bringing communities together, there is a lot of that where somebody communicates differently than you, so you think that they're offensive or they're not educated or something, when
not
because
deserving.
Right, not deserving, well, you know, whatever it may be, and understanding that we all communicate, we come from completely different backgrounds, and we are all worthy.
Well, I can tell you quite honestly that we have someone sleeping in the park next to us and trying to figure out how to, interestingly enough, Jenny Gilrain, before she worked at Touchstone, worked at the Catholic Worker, and that Touchstone has always had a, I think, authentic concern about the poor and the less fortunate. And yet, you know, was sleeping on our back porch, and we couldn't allow that. Mm-hmm. No, you can't sleep there. So I went around looking for places for him to stay. You know, and then, you know, it's on an individual basis, you know. And the fact is that we have a surplus of homeless, and at the Victory House and New Bethany and you know, and if you with a there's all of these hoops that you have to jump through, and then also, let's face it, him is a little cranky, and that speech in Prometheus about better to sleep on a grate than in a comfortable bed and not have a place to stand. That's, you know, he's got a lot of pride, and he would rather be alone in the park on a piece of cardboard and just leave him alone. But the police won't leave him alone, and he can't sleep here. And last fall, the same thing happened. It got cold. He ended up in the hospital because he hurt himself, and that gave him a little chance to find mechanisms into the system because he was in the hospital. And but he's back now, and you know, we had to read him the riot act. You're not doing that again. You know, you're a big boy. Figure it out. And So, but all the systems in our community don't have a place for him. He's not homeless because he wants to be out in the cold. But we do not, we have this kind of, if our health systems, if you think the roads in Brooklyn are patched and beat up, our healthcare system is like, there's about as much harmony and logic to what's going on, you know, as there is in a food fight in Social Security, which is comes in at around $600 a month.
Because the hotel on Fifth Street Hotel.
Yeah.
They do weekly rates.
Yeah, yeah. And what happens is he runs out of money about, 5 days before the end of the month. And at the same time he's smoking cigarettes, right? So I'm like, cut the cigarettes out, right? And you might be able to make it to the end of the month, Or he just makes bad choices. Like, he thinks, there was this scam about somebody had a Cadillac or something like that, and they needed somebody to take it, for $150. You could get a brand new Cadillac. So he gave them his bank account number. They drained it.
Of course.
And then he told them to deliver the Cadillac to our parking lot. And he was out there waiting for this Cadillac to show up. You know, he's not stupid, but he thought God was going to take care of him. And he thought that this Cadillac was an answer from heaven. And he believed, and he was homeless for another month.
Did anybody else see the movie The Public, I think it was called? Mm-hmm. Was shown at SteelStacks on, it was a free Monday presentation funded by the libraries, and
it was a Sunday night.
Sunday night, was it? Okay. It's a Emilio Estevez film. He apparently has been working on this project for like 5 years or something. It's the story of a library in Baltimore. No, not Baltimore.
Someplace like Cleveland or something.
Cleveland.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, public library, and there's a lot of homeless people around, and then at one night they all just decide to stay in the library. And there's this back and forth.
They stage an Occupy type takeover of the third floor of the library.
And it turns out the character played by Emilio Estevez is
a
librarian, but he had a history of being homeless at one time, so he has some sympathy with these people. And it turns out the director of the library ends up having sympathy with the people, but you've got this police lieutenant, this prosecutor is obviously running for mayor and wants to show...
Don't give away the whole movie.
Okay. Anyway. What?
It's a small movie, and when I saw the description, I thought, oh, this sounds really depressing, but I think it's really cool. The library's bringing it, so I want to support that, so let's go. We laugh. It brings up these really... talking about art. And its impact. It brings up really critical issues about society and about homelessness in a way that is so lighthearted that, like, I would strongly recommend it to anyone.
What's the takeaway on that film? I mean, what are we're supposed to, I get that
it's a lot of the
funny,
same,
but...
No, but it's a lot of the same takeaway of the people who are homeless are human beings. They all have stories. Some of them may not want to be in the systems that are available. The systems that are available don't have enough beds, even if they do want to be in them. So it's a lot of the same things we've been talking about.
I think there's some character, I think that's where I saw it. Somebody asks, Well, what's a crime that I can commit that'll just put me in jail for 2 months? In, you know, January, okay? That takes me into warmer weather.
I didn't know that the library and homeless was a thing, and I went down to Nashville. And that's the, like, they were like, yeah, so there's this huge homeless population that during the day, like, they're going to be in here sleeping.
Right here in Bethlehem, too.
Yeah, I didn't know yet.
At Portland, Maine, someone, they had a talk, conversation after the film. Portland, Maine Library actually has a social worker on staff now.
Wi-Fi access.
Which I thought, I gotta make sure Josh Burke knows that, because, you know, maybe between our three libraries we could have a social worker who iterated or part-time or something. Maybe they already do and I don't know about it.
And doesn't Portland, Maine also have an artist?
It did.
On staff in the mayor's office?
I think your library staff, some of them do it. I spent some time in the library the other day because I had a chunk of time and I wanted to do some work. And at the computer carousels,
oh, yeah.
Several homeless people.
Oh, yeah.
And your library staff knows them, and they're there every day, and they talk to them, and can I help you with this? And just as they would with any person coming into that space, but it is becoming important. Yeah, Portland, Maine, for 10 years, Marty Pottinger was here over the weekend. She's a pretty great artist, listens to story, makes work, and she's best known for a thing she did years ago called Water Tunnel Number 3, where she spent time with the workers building one of those water tunnels that won't be done for 50 years, that will be serving New York City with its fresh water from the Catskills. She won an Obie Award for it. She's really... for 10 years, she was hired, I think about 10 years, I think, was hired by the mayor's office to be the artist in City Hall. Art at Work, she called it. And made all kinds of stuff. I mean, their central issue there was a conflict, this will sound familiar, between police and immigrant community. And mostly Somali in that particular city. And worked with both, all those communities, got their stories, and was Irondale's doing work like this now too in New York, in Brooklyn. But had the police tell the Somalian stories and the Somalians tell the police stories in performance. Mm. And in the framing of that, they watched the conflict, because they record various kinds of conflict and calls. They watched that go down and down. And then it didn't have to be performance. They started to make comic books together and write poetry together. I mean, it was visionary. And so, you know, your festival is attracting people like Marty to come down from Maine to see work like that. But we can learn from each other in those things.
I guess, Bill, and maybe I said this, the answer to your question, what's the takeaway, is... okay, I need to think differently about homeless people and about whether there is a path there for me or if the other paths I'm following are enough that, you know, I gotta leave that to other people, but can I encourage other people? That's up.
The expertise, though, is right here. Where did you choose to have this luncheon? Right. And that this is that, and Ian out here, who I found out is my first cousin once removed, is yes, he's a relative.
We're laughing because that's the way the world works.
I know. The expertise is here, is right here. And people are just waiting to have somebody knock on their door to have the conversations. We're not helpless.
Is it that we're just too busy? This busy thing, you know, when everybody, myself in particular, I just feel too busy to do pretty much anything other than what I'm doing to survive.
It makes you
selfish.
You
are too busy to do anything other than survive at the moment.
Yeah. Well, that's been we're in a particularly chronic state of that now. But, you know, but... it does seem that this whole going back to the capitalism and going back to this, you know, struggle for existence, which we've kind of all bought into. Remember when the Chinese came and the, you know, I remember Hei Hai said to me, I asked him, I said, well, what did you learn about the United States? He said, I never believed that you worked so hard. I never knew you worked so hard. He was just stunned by how freaking busy everybody is. And, you know, and so so this busy, and then this hooks in directly in terms of looking into the future. You know, we're very much looking at major disruptions in employment as technology begins to replace drivers. And many of the things that are presently manufactured by people and machines will be manufactured entirely by machines, like cars, for instance. And we're going to have this surplus of people. You know, the question is, how are we spending our time?
And that ties into Prometheus as well. You know, if you are so wrapped up in your job that your job defines who you are, that your work defines who are you when you don't have a job? Who are you when you have nothing to do? What are you? Do you matter? Do you even exist?
Well, that's an existential question, isn't it? you know, and somewhere along the line, I think that there are spiritual values here. This has to do with, you know, God or not God, or, you know, who we are as these strange things that we are. And it's not enough to be you look for a purpose. I mean, there it is. But that purpose also needs that transcendental purpose. If we're all just like, you know, dust in the wind, all right, and eventually nothing matters, a kind of a nihilistic point of view, how can we be healthy? You know, what's going to motivate us to make the effort?
One of the things that really strikes me is that there's a logistical contradiction at the heart of this. Because as you experience, we can't go around and save each Tim individually. That is not a practical way to do it, and it just means that not enough people are going to get the help they need. So, okay, we got to do this at scale. We've got to build a system that helps us save as many teams as possible. And then the instant you build a system, a bunch of people don't fit. And to me, I think that's, I mean, you can have all the compassion, but you've got to be able to figure out how to do it at scale for hundreds of thousands of different individuals who all have separate needs.
Maybe you have to do both.
Well, yeah, but how? And you know, and that, if we had this figured out, we wouldn't even need to have the conversation. I like the idea of art as being part of how you begin to crack some of that open and be able to figure out the individual needs as well as creating a system that actually meets as many needs as possible. But also that there's a reality that no matter how amazing a system you build, there are always going to be some individuals who don't fit.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean
you go after each individual, then you don't have a system and no one gets another service.
Yeah, but there's two things. One is that doesn't mean you can't improve the system.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
I'm not saying you don't try.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And the second thing is being product-oriented, system-oriented, which is a thing that you're going to do, is not the same thing as a process. So when you talk about the arts for instance, or encouraging processes that create a more compassionate world, you can do these things and lower the temperature, so to speak, on the heat that's causing the problem. And then you continue to work on just lowering that temperature and lowering that temperature and lowering that temperature until you get to a point where there's health. And the other side of it is, what is it that is good health? You know, if we think of health as only bad things, then we're only going to get halfway there. We got rid of the bad things. What is good health? Is that an opposite to bad health? You know, or is it just the lack of bad health. And I would maintain that there is such a thing as good health. You know, love or a desire to help each other, etc., etc. What can we do to encourage this? Again, the arts, like take that a joyful noise, take a lot of this work, can really have an effect. And then the individual things will begin to, yes, you have to have both. You have to have the system approach and continue to improve it. And you also have to focus on the more spiritual or emotional aspect of it too.
I 100% agree that the compassion has to be at the heart of every part of the process. It's easy to lose sight of that because it can be so frustrating either in individual situations or when you're trying to run any kind of improvement in the system anyway, and everyone's like, no, you can't do that. And to have some mechanism that brings people back to the compassion, and I think obviously art is a huge part of that, to be able to understand, hey, this person's trying to help. You know, I disagree with the method that they're using. Maybe we can have a conversation about that. The police have a reason for doing what they're doing to our community. The community that's there, that I'm trying to police, they have a reason for doing that. I'm beginning to understand their stories. You know, whatever you can do to help foster that compassion makes the systems more humane. But it's going to be a lot of frustration along the way as you try to improve, which I absolutely think is a worthy goal. I just don't want anyone to think like, hey, plays and everything's better. You know, it's like it's an ongoing process and it is hard.
I want to plug in, the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter starts in November and it goes till April. And that's just across the river. So in case anyone does need sheltering, the Bethlehem Emergency Shelter.
Where across the river?
75 Market Street. If you just Google Bethlehem Emergency Shelter.
Christ UCC?
Yeah. It's a church. From November, starting November 1st to April. So just in case.
Thank you.
Anyone needs info.
When you're talking about good health, I happened to be at Donegan Elementary School this morning, and I was there. Morning announcements happened while I was there. And they did a little guided meditation, essentially. It was focused on hot chocolate and breathing in your hot chocolate and breathing out. And I thought, wow, when it's one of the other people I was with said, why didn't they do that when I was in school?
Was that before or after the Pledge of Allegiance?
It was after the Pledge of Allegiance.
See, there's a myth out there that stuff is happening instead of the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, no, they did the Pledge of Allegiance. Yeah. And I was not in a classroom, so I was not observing how the children responded to this. But I also have a different question, which what you said, Jerry, at one point triggered for me. Is healthcare, and I put it in quotes, a good basis for our economy? You know, if that's what's replaced the steel, and I was kind of intrigued in the play where, oh, we have good hospitals because of the steel? That seems kind of weird, because that would mean caring about the workers, but maybe it's because of what you said, there was money in it. But you know, now the steel's gone, and hospitals certainly seem like a major industry in the Valley, and is that a good basis for an economy? It feels like it should be good because health care maybe actually helps with health, certainly in some cases, but I don't know.
It sounds like the fact that it's a business, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Think about it. Was it Eisenhower who, after his presidency, gave this speech of like, I unwittingly sold out the American people to the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
And that feels like, we're doing it to ourselves every day with the medical-industrial complex.
Yeah. And is that what we want our community to be? Yeah, I want good health in my community. I want it for everyone, whether they're insured or not. Well, insurance is a whole other tech, but...
Yeah.
But is that an economic base?
It is. I mean, I don't know if it is. It is true right now. And so it was, you know, not something I invented. It's something we've
heard
repeatedly.
Sure.
And so it just to say it and face it. And sometimes what art can do is reframe. It's just look at reframing and changing the narrative. understanding the narrative differently, but art's terrible at making new systems. Art is terrible at finding or executing those solutions. It's real good at building compassion for another, for somebody else. And it's pretty good at understanding, but only to get people to go farther in their understanding. And it's real good at connection, at connecting people up.
Well, so I'm not asking you to answer.
No, I'm just saying, I think about that all the time. So there are three things that are the motors for systemic change. And it's compassion, understanding, and connection, and buying into connection. If we buy into those things, and art can help two of those things, and sort of a little bit of understanding, but we're an unreliable narrator as artists. We're not.
You make things up.
What? I just know. I mean, I'm not going to presume to replace the work of scholars and scientists and folks who are really good at this stuff. Journalists. The best we can do is get people to read up, you know, and understand. But if we process that, we can use art to begin that and build compassion. But the fact that we gather people together is huge. That's a really big deal.